Are we all comfortable? Page 2. Can you press the mic?
Just a housekeeping issue here. We've got the report date for the 20th of October, which is obviously the day the report was finished. Are we, should it not be dated to today's date if we approve it at today's date? Or,
Yes, remember this is a draft, and then after approval it will then indicate today's date. Thanks for that. The next page, please. On page 1.
I noticed.
Talk to them.
Oh, maybe it's been fixed up since I saw the last version. There was a stray letter somewhere, but I can't see it now. If I find it, I'll point it out.
Okay, may we then move to the next page? Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Are you happy with the examples that we are giving there on page 5? If you're happy, can we move to the next page, 6? Page 7. Are you happy with the with the stated frameworks there? Are we okay? Mr. Atkinson?
Point number 11, it's not the X1, Municipal Finance Management Act, number 56 of 2013, and related bylaws, BY laws.
Come again?
It's just a typo there, sorry, in top of page 7, under point X1, which is Municipal Finance Management Act, number 56 of 2003, and related BY laws, bylaws. Instead of
BI.
Instead of
BI. BY. Bylaws. Bylaws.
Yes, I'm looking for Okay, thanks,
Mr. Atkinson. Can we go to page 7? I'm in page 8, so yes, thanks, Dr. Kleiner. Page 9. Colleagues, Page 9. Page 10. Take note of those previous recommendations. If you feel you need to add any more, or you want to take out some, please do so. Page 11. Page 12. Yes, that's it,
Thank you very much, Chair. Everything is in order, Chair. But I'm just suggesting here that on 6.1.1,
yeah,
the acronym there should first be explained in full so that the reader may familiarize themselves with what it stands for. The FMPPI.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other than that, are we fine?
Yes. Can we move on to the next page, 13? I think members should take into cognizance the fact that we are considering, you know, the strategic plan is 2014-2019, but it's also important that we look at the previous year, because this is not a zero-based budget. It is an accrual kind of a budget so far that we are basing ourselves on. So we have a baseline here. Can we go to page 14 of page 15? Page 16. Is the report that clear? It can only tell me two things. Either we didn't read, or we are satisfied with the way it is crafted. Page 16, page 17, page 18, Colleagues, Mr. Atkinson.
Sorry, Chair, it's on page 19, at the top of page 19. I think it might
page
be
19.
Yeah, it might be superfluous, but 7.7.3.1. It's written there 14.5 billion rand in funding approvals. The R in front of 14.5 billion says the rand. I don't think so. I know it's a small matter, but
can you come back to it? What I say here?
Top of page 19, point 7. Point, yeah, top of page 19, 7.3.1.
Yeah.
The line there says 14.5 billion rand in funding approvals and 180 transactions. I think the word rand there is actually superfluous because it's already in the R.
Yeah, yeah.
14.5 billion, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for that. I was trying to. Okay. Can we get to 22? Because we had already passed 20 and 21. Where are you, Mr. Atkinson?
On page 20. That was 7.3.9. This is in addition to 8 items.
I think you are reminding us that this is not only our report, it's meant also for the public out there. We understood when the CEO was really reporting to us, but for an ordinary person out there won't understand what we mean by that. So sorry that I also missed it in the corrections. I think we need to correct that. Let's find a better way, a better wording for that. If there's anyone with better English could assist us, if you want to recommend something. In addition, the IDC to perform regular deep dives. Regular investigations. Will that work, colleagues?
Monitoring.
Or reviews.
Yeah, monitoring.
No, there is already quarterly business reviews. Monitoring. Won't that work? But can't both of them work? Because you monitor and then investigate also. Won't both of them work? Monitor stroke investigation and quarterly reviews. What do you think of that? Okay, thank you. Can we then, thanks, Mr. Atkinson, can we move on then?
We were on page 22. Can we go to page 23? I just want you to spend some time on that one. Actually, starting from 22, 23, 24. Time on that in these three pages. Satisfy ourselves. If we are satisfied, then let's proceed. I on 22, 23?
22, Chair. Just 8.1.2.
Yeah.
On the third line after prospects, there needs to be a
full stop.
Full stop,
yeah. Okay. Any other?
Chair, sorry, 8.1.1.
Yes.
On the third line there. At the, yeah, the end of that third line, it's got, as well as the efforts towards creating a decent work environment. I think that should be a comma rather than a semicolon.
Okay.
Okay.
What's the issue there?
That at the end of the third line, the 8.1.1, where it says, as well as its efforts towards creating a decent work environment, I think that should be a comma rather than a semicolon.
That kind of
almost brings the sentence
to
a conclusion.
I don't think there should be anything there. There's an end coming.
Yeah, I bet you can take that.
Not just
leave
that semicolon.
Yeah.
Remove it. Are we satisfied with
page 22? Can we go to page 23 now?
Sure.
Yes.
8.1.3, final line in 8.1.3. I just think it might be better to say this may have a negative impact on the work of the market rather than a detracting impact. I'm not sure if there is really that great English.
Negative. I don't think it's the same. We can do with that. Yes.
And also, sorry, starting 8.1.4, rather than equally, you can say addition.
Oh, yeah, 8.23.
Yeah.
In addition. Anyone with a problem with that?
Chair.
Yes.
I just had a query about 8.1.2 as it carries on to page 23. The last sentence says, the committee believes, this is the top of page 23, the committee believes that the strict implementation and monitoring of the NGP targets could have softened the impact of economic shocks on unemployment and economic growth and subsequently on poverty and inequality levels. I'm not sure that's true. Those economic shocks were going to occur regardless of how strictly the NGP targets were implemented.
You want to respond to that, Ntate Tlhene? Thank you.
Thank you, Sheno. I understand the Honorable Kadu's concern there, but I think the spirit of the paragraph centers around the word softened. It does not say eradicated. So even if something has not been removed, but you know, it's softened, if we monitor properly in a strict manner, then you know the impact will then be softened. So I think if it says softened, it does not hurt as much. Thank you.
Okay, maybe let's hear the concern as raised by Mr. Atkinson. I mean, Dr. Kadu. What's the main concern there?
My concern, Chair, is that we're talking about a global picture of economic shocks, and I think it's unrealistic to think that we as a committee, by strictly implementing and monitoring the new growth path targets, could have made any difference to those economic shocks. I don't think they have any effect whatsoever, even if it's softening. I just think it's an unnecessary sentence, that's all.
Okay. Was the total membership feeling around this?
Yeah, I agree with Kado's comments, because I do think that what has taken place has been something that has actually been in many respects beyond our control. And I think to think that in some way implementation of the NGP would have made very much difference to that, I think is kind of a bit misleading.
Okay, so you don't believe that our strengthening of our monitoring role, especially around the strict implementation of the NGP, could have made a difference? You're saying it wouldn't, because this has nothing to do with us. It's all related to the both internal and external shocks. What about the internal shocks?
Yeah, I think you would be correct in saying adding into internal shocks in here, because that certainly has had an effect on our economy as well. Yeah.
Okay, that is then.
Thank you, Chair. No, Chair, I think as we read the sentence, we need to focus on the NGP targets. You know, if we are able to realize, if we are able to implement and monitor and ensure that the NGP targets are reached, this has the potential to improve the situation, because indeed the targets of the NGP are very crucial, and they cover quite a number of very, very important matters. So if they are achieved, these targets, then you can have a situation where the impact is somewhat softened. The targets of the NGP are important.
Okay. I'm here waiting for, yes, there's been motivation and counter-motivation. Can we conclude?
Chair, maybe in the sentence itself we could we can bring in that factor of internal and external shocks and say, bearing in mind the effect of the internal and external shocks, or the overwhelming effect of internal and external shocks in our economy. May want to make a comment about the NGP, but I go with the Honourable Kado, where I think a lot of those internal and external shocks were of such a magnitude that it would be difficult.
Okay, how would you then coin the whole sentence?
Chip, I think we should move away from this focus on targets, because as I've tried to indicate, no matter how much we as a committee insist that those targets must be reached, that doesn't actually make any difference. If we look at the kind of contributing factors which would allow us to reach those targets, so for example, if there are certain things that need to be done to improve infrastructure which would allow us to meet the targets, or to help unblock certain things which stymie economic growth, those would help us to reach the targets. But what we're saying here is that we need to strictly implement the targets. I think the focus should be more on the kind of enabling factors that would allow us to meet the targets. So if we rephrased to say something like, the committee believes that stricter monitoring of the contributory factors that would enable the NGP targets to be met, ... We need to reframe it in some way that focuses less strictly on the targets themselves than the kind of actions that we as a committee should pursue in order to reach the targets.
There exists, you know, I think what you need to do is...
What you need to do is just to... Can we just pack that, craft what your recommendation? We'll then look at it against the what is on the what is on now, and then move forward afterwards. Can we allow that so that we move forward? I just would call for the full participation in this regard, because really we need to find the suitable wording for this particular thing, because it's a very serious input you are making here. As much as we're concerned about the low economic growth and growth rates and the high unemployment rates, looking at the responsibilities or the responsibility of the committee, vis-a-vis that, what could we have done really as a committee to ensure that we unlock really some of the challenges that led to especially our local economic growth issues, in as far as maybe micro and macro economic factors are concerned. I think that should be the context under which we're looking at this. What was the role of the committee that we neglected, that we feel that if we could have added something in terms of our oversight role, could have assisted in alleviating some of these challenges? Is there anything that we could have done that would have made an impact to ensure that our performance is much better than where it is now? Should we have intensified our oversight role? In what manner? That would have made things different. That's a question that we must all ask ourselves. Or is it, as it said, that this affects us beyond our shoulders? Even if we could have done anything, nothing could have changed still. Yeah. Just after that, unless we're talking to another, I was just summarizing on this, so that when Dr. Kado finishes with the what he recommends us to replace this with, we can then look at.
Yeah, just to comment on what you're saying there, and talking about maybe how we could do things, could have done things better to assist with the...
No, we'll come back to that
okay.
discussion. I was just summarizing after
okay.
that discussion. Right. Can we look at another issue on page 23 then?
It's point 8.1.5. This is talking about the human resources of the competition tribunal. And I just think the last sentence under 8.1.5 could be rewritten, because it's maybe, again, a little bit confusing to someone who might be outside this committee and reading it. It just says it is undesirable for institutions like the competition tribunal to have to put off operational functioning at a critical level because of lack of human resources. Basically, what we're saying is that their lack of staff means that they're unable to do some quite important factors. So it might be better to say it is important for institutions like the Competition Commission to ensure strategic positions are filled to ensure that it can operate efficiently. I think that's really what we're trying to say.
We can simply do away with that.
Yeah.
With the whole sentence, if members allow, agree. Because this was just emphasizing the two above sentences. What do members think? Can you just do away with that letter sentence? Do you agree?
We do.
We do, okay. Thanks, Mr. Atkinson. Any other issue? Still on page 23. Are we fine with the introduction on the recommendations? Clearly, what we were trying to do here was to ensure that this document becomes readable also to and understood by people other than us. So it's quite clear that in trying to do so, we might have overstepped. But I think members must feel free, really, to correct where they feel, or even enrich where they feel needs to be enriched. This is our document. It will remain our document and our legacy. So let's ensure that we really contribute to it. Mr. Atkinson?
Yes, it's in line with what Dr. Carter was saying a little bit earlier, and it comes up again in that first paragraph in under number 9.
9.1, is that
what you're saying? It's on page 23, so it's before the 9.1.
Page 23,
yeah. It was just in that first paragraph under committee recommendations number 9. The second sentence says, the department is urged to implement the tenets of our policy instruments with more rigor and closer monitoring. And I think that's a similar sentiment to what Dr. Carter was saying, was it might be better in some way to reword that as well, in line with the fact that we should be looking at some of the underlying issues rather than just saying we need to implement policy more strictly. Dr. Carter was saying we should be actually looking at some of the aspects of that policy.
Yeah, but the two are different. Remember, the other one is sort of observing things that could have been done better, what could be done better. And then here we are sort of sobering up to say, while there was that kind of a thing, we feel that this could be, you know. We acknowledge that the operations are, you know, the environment was quite difficult. But even though like that, we still feel that we need more vigor and closer monitoring so that you make an impact to whatever that you've put in place. This is what he said, that we understand the reasons behind, but at the same time we feel that more vigor and more closer focus should be put in place. This is what is there, is just to identify in the previous one, identifying things that could have been, you know, done to ensure smooth running of everything. And then here we are saying, after acknowledging that there were certain things as given by the department, this is what we're feeling that could should be done. Here you are much calmer. You know, when you analyze something, you become even more, you know, sometimes you become even more irrational sometimes. But then you sober up because now you realize that, no, after getting these responses, this is where we should be even, we should be doing better. You are giving recommendations now. I'm not sure whether I'm clearer. So I just don't want us to treat the two the same, because the recommendations would be something that is coming up with a solution. There we were just talking, you know. Colleagues, are you comfortable with page 23? Can we go to page 24?
Chair, this sentence starts with, this is especially, is it not proper for us to...
Can you point us to the actual sentence?
It's page number 9.
9, yeah, 9.
The,
9
point? Just 9. First paragraph. Line number 3.
Okay.
This is especially. Is it not proper to leave out especially? That's so this is important.
That's on page 23.
Yes.
Oh, I'm on page 23.
Or maybe change especially to particular.
Yeah.
Third line.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay, particularly as we enter the national growth past 6 years.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. If we agree, do we agree? This is English, Pella. Some of us, this is the fifth language. So you must pardon us. Okay. To some of us. Thank you. We are now on page 24. Are we done with 25?
On page 24,
yeah?
The second paragraph, the plans presented by the IDC under Project Evolve are especially encouraged. I think they should be encouraging, not encouraged, as they seek to unlock potential in new and future industries.
Encouraging, are we comfortable with that?
Yeah.
We're fine. Okay. Yes, Dr. Glenn.
Can we also request that the wording from 9.1 up to 9.9 be moved away a little bit from the numbering.
9 points?
Yeah. Everything that is said from 9.1 up to 9.9 at the bottom, the wording just to be moved technically away from the numbers, just a little bit.
So that is professional.
Yeah. It seems to be too close for our little comfort.
I understand. I guess that it's okay to be here and not. Okay. Otherwise you agree
with the content? Okay. Are we comfortable, all of us, with the content? Babu Mabika and Babu Mbata, are you comfortable? I'm asking you.
I'm comfortable.
You are. Babu Mbata, you're comfortable. Okay. Mr. Atkinson?
Yes, sir. It's on 9.11. Just a
9.11.
Okay. Page 25. Just a slight wording change. This is the IDC should devise a clear strategy to ensure that information on opportunity to develop and finance for women is communicated and made available as extensively as possible, rather than as far and wide as possible.
To ensure that information on opportunities for development, finance for women is communicated and made available
extensively.
As extensively as possible.
Are we in agreement on that one? As extensively?
Extensively is fine.
Yes, we did, to ensure. Yeah. Are we comfortable with that? Member Simbi, you were saying something?
No.
You're fine?
I'm fine.
Okay. You were thinking a lot. Okay. All right. Are we comfortable with everything now? Can we own the report? Is this report will make us proud as members of this committee? Having done our report, our work for medium term. That is clear.
Thank you very much. In the conclusion, deliberately, we are mentioning all this former this and former this and acting that to emphasize the fact that in the final analysis, our department must ensure that they've got permanent staff there. So I think it is correct. It sends a correct message, Chair. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think it emphasizes that between 2014 and to date, we had 1, 2, 3 heads of departments. That is in 2 years.
And we failed to give them some awards.
But one was not acting. Ms. Schreiner was not acting. She was permanent.
This is the one we started.
In 2014, yes.
Yeah, this is the one we started.
No, we started with the acting, Mr. Coleman, followed by Mr. Levin, followed by, who was next after Levin?
When we started, there was a lady who was a little bit young in the car, and then she was a
woman. What are you actually saying? sorry, I was saying Mr. Mauser.
Acting.
Before acting, yes, before Miss Schreiner.
So, the lady
you're talking to, Miss Schreiner?
The one was moved to remain in the president.
You say she was what? She was what?
Good.
No, she didn't. He didn't say that.
I was saying the one who was.
Dear Makar.
Must not come as evidence of undermining women. It can't be correct.
No, I'm not undermining any woman. I'm just saying exactly as it was.
As you saw it, but it wasn't like that. We didn't see it like that.
That's how I saw it.
Yeah, and that remains your own
opinion.
No, never removed. She got another job.
Exactly. So what?
Promotion.
No.
Okay, let's leave that, because if we wanted to know why she was removed, we could have asked the minister. Can we, because she's here, when you came in, she was the DG. Yes. She was appointed the DG of this department. After Mr. Mauser, ne? Yes. Mr. Mauser was acting. Okay. And remember that the Mr. Naidu, who passed on, was then replaced by Mr. Simpson, who's now acting, who's still acting as the DG. So, yeah, that is the situation. Are we happy with the report, or we go back to the pact issue there? That's on page 23. But I think we should take the whole, just to get the context. The committee understands that global growth outlook remained subdued in 2015-16. The new growth path was aimed at boosting economic and employment prospects. However, given that this was a midterm year of the target set in the new growth path, the committee is concerned about the low economic growth rates and high unemployment levels that are troubling the country. The committee believes that the strict implementation and monitoring of the NGP targets could have softened the impact of economic shocks on unemployment and economic growth, and subsequently on poverty and inequality levels. Can we get the...
Can I say something before Dr. Carlo comes?
Okay.
Now that you've read the paragraph from the beginning, Chair, I noticed that the little change that we need to introduce here to try and make, you know, a better sense of what we want to say here is that we should say, believe that a stricter implementation, it changes everything there, and it makes it more understandable. a stricter implementation and monitoring of the NGP targets could have softened the impact of economic shocks on unemployment, etc., etc. A stricter. It means we did not really apply ourselves as much as we should have done. That is why what I would like to suggest, Chair. But if Dr. Caro comes up with something much, much harder than that, then that will be fine. But I think a stricter changes the picture altogether. I thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. Can you now hear what Dr. Caro has for us?
Chair, this section is an observation section, so it's not a recommendation. And we must bear in mind that this sentence is a reflection on us as a committee. So we are saying that we as a committee have failed in a certain respect, which may be true, but I think we should bear that in mind before committing it to paper. I would be happy with the observation ending after the statement, high unemployment levels that are troubling the country. I think it's sufficient to observe the first part of the sentence. I don't think that the second part of the sentence adds anything substantive or substantial, and I'd be much more comfortable just omitting it altogether.
Okay. All right. What are we saying? There's the recommendation. Now the suggestion is that we omit the whole sentence. Dr. Tliane, do you still feel strong on the what you've just read?
I was hoping the chair would just test that. It's stricter, just to think about it before we remove the whole sentence.
Come again, you say you're hoping that the chair would?
As I proposed the change, you were getting organized on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you're back, I was hoping that you just consider the proposal that I was making, because I think it somewhat changes the meaning altogether. If it says that a stricter implementation and monitoring would have blah 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 blah.
Mm.
So, but if you want to remove it, I don't think if we point a finger at ourselves, sometimes there's nothing wrong in that, because constructive criticism is also important. We don't just want to appear to be very nice and clean. If we say we think we could have done things better, there's nothing wrong with that. But you can remove the sentence. I would not, be violently opposed to that.
The reason why I'm putting it back into the room is because I don't want to make it my issue and your issue and Dr. Caro's issue. At the end of the day, it should be what all of us are satisfied with. Hence, I'm saying, I did get what you were saying. And obviously, I participated in this, in the process of the drafting of this report. I was actively involved in it. So, obviously, I'm somehow part of it. And hence I'm giving other people that opportunity to look at it. And I think you are correct. The issue is not just about writing good about ourselves. If we feel there's somewhere where we haven't done good, and my understanding of the whole report, the whole thing, was that it's not necessarily saying the committee, pointing a finger at the committee. These are general observations. They might give a reflection of the committee's performance. They might be giving a reflection of the department's performance, including that of you know, the general performance of our government, not necessarily us. So I think when we discuss this and when we look at this, we should look at it under that context. Babu Pikinini.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Mind Chair, I think Chair, the people that prepared the report, they've done well, marvelous work. Really, it's a true reflection of what is taking place in this committee. We were dealing with a number of issues, Chair, which quite were not really dealt with in the manner that we wish to. It comes clear in our recommendation, particularly in point one when you go down there, those clauses. It comes very clear what we wanted to happen. Those issues talk about stricter monitoring and all of that. But in my view, I'm trying to say, whilst we have to be very hard to ourselves, but really it is that we did something, no matter what. And therefore, if that is the case then, it is important that we agree on this particular line, because in another line, some of the input that are dealt with here have been covered, have been dealt with. So I think we can live with that omitting of that line. It will never make any harm. I think Umna will say both they are correct, the issue that they are raising. You know, because normally you want to be more stricter. I know you normally want to be more stricter at all times, but you always allow space for us to maneuver and able to move forward with the committee. And that's what you always want us to have. And from those learning of from yourselves, Chair, I think this performance, Chair, it really suits us very well, Chair, at this particular moment. And I would say that these principles are, if you look at our minutes, for instance, it goes straight to those minutes that we're busy with this particular one, from the 17th September until now, Chair. They are very clear. They talk to challenges. They talk to where we come from. They talk where we are. You still remember we were really crumbling at the particular stage, trying to make sure that we intervene. You know, where it was difficult to make ends meet, Chair. Hence, we came up with these particular policies, Chair. Now, I would really say that we can live without that sentence because it's really been covered. When you said to us, let's start afresh from where that sentence started to, it's really too eager where it really come up with what we want to have. And then when you go to recommendation, that one is clearly covered, Chair. Sorry to hammering too much on it, it's because I didn't say anything on it. So I wanted to say that. Thank you very much.
Okay. I think we have two people now that are agreeing that we must do away with that sentence. Is that the general feeling now? In my organization, the majority rules. I don't know with others. Should I apply that to this committee? Majority rules? And our electoral system also talks to the majority rules principle. Is that the feeling of the House? Of the meeting, yes. Okay, thank you. That then allows us to do away with that sentence. Good. Thank you very much. With that, then, Nabisa.
Thank you, Chair. On that same line, I wanted to highlight that I included the high unemployment and inequality levels. So I just wanted to make sure that it's okay with you, Chair, and the members.
Right,
because we forgot to, because the mandate of the department is inclusive growth.
Can we put our minds to that quickly? To that. We're saying the three go together anyway. These are triple challenges. I don't see anything wrong with that. Can we agree? Okay, thank you. That then concludes our discussion on the report. Can we then go to the next aspect of that? Meaning we need to officially adopt with the amendment made. And before we do so, can we be reminded of the amendments, Peter Paul and Novisa?
Okay, let me just scroll down, Chair.
You can have a 2 minutes break while you're doing that, you're organizing yourself. Let's grab a cup of coffee or so.
This coming one.
Okay, welcome back. Are you ready, Nwabisa and Peter Paul?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Can you just remind us of the amendment?
Thank you, Chair. So we present amendments to the reports for the record. Chair, on page one, one of the things we did was to make sure that the report is aligned to today's date as the date of consideration. After that, the 21st of October 2016, after which we then moved to page 12. There's an acronym that we needed to write in full, the FMPPI.
Framework for Managing Program Performance Information.
On page 6, Chair, Chair, on page 6, my apologies, I left out a typo that we needed to correct in the word the bylaws.
The bylaws?
Yes.
expand on page 6. Just on page 7.
Page 7, Chair.
Yes.
After which we move to page 19.
Yeah.
That spoke to a 14.5 billion rand that we needed to remove a rather redundant word, a repetition, and then there is 7.3.9. I don't know if it's
I can't hear you now. I think on page 19.
On page 19, 7.3.1.
Yes.
Yes.
And then,
and then on page 20, under 7.3.9,
yes.
At the beginning of the sentence, we had to add in addition. And then part of the sentence changes to performing regular monitoring and investigations and quarterly business reviews, using those two words together there.
Yeah.
Deletion of deep dives. I think next is page 22, under 8.1.1, we removed the last sentence.
Okay.
No, semicolon.
After environment.
After environment, the punctuation was
except
removed.
For the environment.
And then, Chair, the next...
Except for the semicolon there.
Yeah. Chair, it is the next sentence on page
the
23.
Page
it's 8.1.2.
The first paragraph on page 23.
Yes.
The second sentence.
The second sentence, there was punctuation.
The whole of this you remove, but then you add. After unemployment level. And inequality.
Yes, Chair. You are right. 8.1.4 or 8.1.3.
That are troubling the country. What did you say about that? There was a bit of a concern around troubling the country. Did we resolve on that one? Nothing. It's still fine. We're comfortable with it. Okay, can you continue?
Chair, under 8.1.3, we removed the word a detracting impact, and we then chose negative impact instead.
Mm-hmm.
Under 8.1.4, we started the sentence with in addition. Under
we removed equally
and replaced it with in addition.
Mm-hmm.
Under 8.1.5. We removed the last part of the sentence, thus ending it at with the work of a highly specialized nature.
No. We removed
the one that started on it is undesirable.
Yes, Chair.
We end
so we removed that last part of the sentence. It now ends at these institutions deal with work of a highly specialized nature.
Okay.
After which we move to the recommendation, the paragraph, I think it is line 3, where we start with, it is particularly, this is particularly important instead of especially important as we enter the National Growth Path 6 years of implementation. And then Chair, on the next page, the third line on the next page, where we say the plans presented by the IFDC's Project Evolve are specially encouraging instead of encouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And then under 9.11, what I say first, we said the ITC should devise a clear strategy to ensure, and then at the end to say, and made available as extensively as possible. And Chair, those are for other recommendations for the record.
Okay.
Chair, sorry, there was one other thing that we overlooked. It was on page 19, 7.3.3. We've just got there 2.9 for Black Industrialists. So we're short of a billion there.
Okay.
Come again?
7.3.3. It says that 2.9 approved for Black Industrialists should be 2.9 billion.
That was a necessary intervention, thank you. Did you notice that? Okay, after all that, we agree with the amendment as cool. What can we then officially approve the report with the recommendation for tabling? And approval by the House. Do you agree with everything? Who agrees? Hey, we should do this. All this process,
you know.
Can we have a motion
after? No. We. Do you agree with the content, everything? Do we? Okay. Let's get the mover then for the adoption of the report.
Thank you very much. I wish to move to say let's really adopt this report. I think it's a true reflection. With the amendment made that we really accept the report. I move for acceptance of the report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Bapiginini. He moves for the adoption of the report. Can you get a seconder? Dr. Mabiga?
Seconded.
Mabiga seconds the adoption of the report. Anyone who doesn't agree with the report? Babumbata?
So that there will not be any surprises.
Can you tell us what is it that you don't agree with?
Chair, I don't have to say anything. I will not agree with.
Okay.
Also, Chair, we know that the DA reserves its rights on the report, just for future engagement in the House.
You reserve the rights of the approval?
To say what we like in the House, yes.
No, but that is not... the fact is that you were part of the amendment of the report. You were part of the report. You amended the report and then you reserve the rights which you normally have under the rules of Parliament. What does it say in terms of this report? Are you saying you don't agree with the report? Or are you talking only to the discussions or debate at the House in relation to the issues raised here? I just want to be clear so that everybody is clear. Because these are two separate things and processes.
When we come to make a declaration...
you will be making declarations.
Yeah. Chair,
don't need to know what declaration you'll be making. Yeah.
If I can say, I mean, I think we've reached the report in the committee, but the reality is the vote in the House is the Czech Caucus decision, so we going to be on the day, basically, because it is a decision of our entire caucus. So we can't make that choice now at this point. But I think we can approve the report. I mean, yeah.
Agree. No, that is fair. We understand. Everybody talks to the caucus's decisions and so forth. But I'm talking now of this report because you participated in this report, and my understanding is that you don't have a problem with the report. Am I wrong?
Chair, we don't reject the report in its current form. What I would like to say is that in future, I think it would be useful if we can finalise this report well in advance of the Minister giving his mini-budget in years going forward, because we've got less than 24 hours to go before he makes a speech, and I think it would be helpful if we, in future, could actually make sure that this report is sewn up at least a week before that occurs.
Unfortunately, we're given timelines by the legislature. Parliament gives us that, and we're still within that realm of things. We're not out at all. Actually, we are much advanced as this committee. There are committees that only are going to be finalizing later. We're within time, the timelines as given by Parliament, so we're not outside that. I think our report is one of those that are well in advance. Before that. Is that it, Ken?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, Chairperson, we understand that parties reserve a right to do what they want to do when we sit there in the National Assembly. However, I think it is not our brief as the committee to concern ourselves with what happens elsewhere. We sat together here as a committee and we scrutinized the document, and almost everybody in the House made crucial interventions. Participation is not just about talking. Sometimes you can be silent and not say anything, but you are participating also by not saying anything. So what is expected of us now is not to remind each other that we'll be fighting there in the House and so. We expect that to happen. It's quite much. That's a multi-party democracy. But here, we become bigger persons, you know, if we act like members of the committee and say, yes, this is where we started, we've corrected the document, we've amended it and so on, we've agreed, we've compromised, we've done everything, yes, we adopt the document. We know that side, we need to fight. The opposition, at least, needs to be seen to be opposing what the majority party is doing. It's accepted. We don't worry about that. But here, it's more dignified. It also builds us as a committee to say we work here with strong-minded people who understand what is happening. We adopt the document. We leave it at that. If they come on the other side with a gnupkire and what, we expect that. Because they've got to work for their breakfast. There's no problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I did learn for clarifying that. It is true, you know, it is also important to note that EFF hasn't been with us throughout. And I thought their quietness, that's why I zoomed into them at some stage to say, what are you saying? The fact is they were part of the deliberations of the report. Ubabu Mbata was part of some meetings, not all. Even those that he was part of, he could not finish. You know, he was not in full sessions of those. So as a result, one would put an opinion to say, maybe he wasn't quite clued with some of the issues. Yes, he read, he might have gone through the report, the annual reports of the department and some entities, but the fact of the matter is, when we are here, we clarify issues, and then issues that we have a different opinion on, we also clarify. Yes, you agree to disagree somewhere, but then those issues get debated in the full House. It's okay. But what I wanted to establish here is that is whether is there part of the report as tabled as you know tabled before you that Babumbata you don't agree with. It is very important for us because as we are here, we were all participating in trying to make the report a collective, you know, document. And if there are some parts that you feel, as we were talking, were not making sense, it's very important that we know. It's very unfair that you are going to keep quiet in the meeting and then go out there and say something that we do not know. If it's something related on the policy matters or just politicking or ideological issues, it's understandable there. You can raise them there in Parliament. We can't oppose that. But here, we just want to clean up our, you know, our documents. And if you're saying that this document has some areas that you're not satisfied with, say it now so that we understand. And we'd want to put that in the report as part of the things that you feel are not okay. The members agree, but EFF. But then EFF doesn't agree with this part of the report. And it's important that we understand. It's only fair to us that we understand. Because we've been quiet the whole of the meeting. And I got worried. That's why I kept on asking, are you okay? We went through page by page. The report, you said nothing. And you reserve your right to be quiet. But it can't be that you, at the end of the discussions, when we are adopting a report, you come out and say EFF doesn't agree with the report. But what aspect, which aspects of the report that you don't agree with? I think you can disclose those committees. As this is where we all, you know, we put our heads together, we discuss and do whatever we want to do with whatever is before us. But if you can't do that even here, then which other platform would you want to do that? You are also robbing your people an opportunity to contribute.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm surprised that there's so much need for me to explain. But here is my take. We have a completely different program of action to our economic outlook. We do not support most of the things that are directed at this report. So technically, in as much as we would like as an opposition to see the government implement the things that they want to implement because they won elections, yes, but our program of action is vastly different from most of these issues and we will not intend to commit in any way or form. Whether they are programmatic, whether they are at committee, at whatever level, we have decided to take a political posture.
A political posture that doesn't necessarily relate to the work that we're doing. No, that's understandable, and I think it's you reserve the right to that. But as long as it doesn't have anything to do with what we're doing here, it's fine. And I think it will be important that we include that in our report. That because of the party decision or attitude towards
and maybe Chair, to comfort you, there are several departments we will be doing that consistently now. It's all about what we intend to achieve.
No, that's fine. I gave you that opportunity.
Just to give you a source of comfort.
No, I don't need that. It's the electorate that needs that. Me, I don't have that problem because the work that we are doing, I'm just concerned about what we are doing now. The general political thing, it's my party's business. And my business in some way because I'm representing my party. But then it has somewhere where we will meet. It's fine because we all have that opportunity. But I was just concerned about what is happening currently here. And thanks for clarifying that. Members, I guess we have officially approved the report for tabling to Parliament. And anybody deserves the right then to debate it or to put a declaration in Parliament as after tabling this this report. But otherwise, the committee is satisfied so far with the outcome of this BRRR process. That then concludes that part of our discussion. And then we'll take us to the next item on our agenda. But before that, can we break for 2 minutes while we allow the next presentation?
Maybe a break, Chair. I just want to get this clear. Mm-hmm. In terms of the minuting of the record of the proceedings, because this finalization of the report has to do with many other things that happened before this day. And I note that in the minutes, it will appear that Mr. Mabiga is one of the supporters of the proposal, but he was not here for the remainder of the best sittings of this. And how does that become a reality? Because you must have had at least 60-80% of the content to actually support. How many meetings has Julie attended? Because you raised the question of somebody was attending and somebody
was
not attending.
Can I call you to order then on that? Because this is a BRRR.
Exactly.
If you follow the BRRR process, it doesn't only involve us meeting with the around the annual reports.
Exactly. So why were you saying I was not part of the meeting
I
was not part of the other meetings?
No. You were not part of the majority of the meeting.
No, that's not true.
The reason why I mentioned that, Babumbat, can you switch off your mic? Can you, please, I'm talking now.
You must switch off.
Okay. You have a right to do that.
Yeah.
I'm very patient. The fact is that you were not part of the meeting. And the reason why I mentioned that the meetings of this committee, the majority of the meetings of this committee were not part of. Well, we can go back to the records. And I will go back to the records just to motivate that. The reason I was mentioning you in particular is because you were not saying anything. And at the end, you came out to say you don't support the report. I was worried because you were quiet throughout the process, throughout the amendment of this report. You didn't say anything. The only time you come in is when we adopt the report and you say you don't approve of. That's when I said you were not part of the most of the meetings. I couldn't have said the same to Bob Mabiga because he actually seconded the approval of the report. Why would I even mention that? And the reason I allowed him to second is because he is part of the meeting. He is part of the oversight. We can go back to the records also on that. So I'm saying to you, that is that, and may you allow me to close the meeting because I had already closed the meeting.
Yeah, but I'm not going to allow you to misrepresent me.
No,
I was part of the meeting.
You said you're going to present your case in Parliament.
Exactly which one of those
meetings
that
let's allow you to do that. I'll say it
misrepresent me.
No, we'll say it. I'm not scared of that. We'll say it because we have records. We'll say that exactly how many meetings you've attended, how many meetings you didn't attend. And it's for the public to hear that. That's why I'm saying it's good that you are saying
everybody.
No, I'm not, because you're the one who raised that. And I'm responding to what you were saying. I'm not responding to everybody because these are the faces that I, or as a chair, that I always see. I'm saying specifically to you because this is what is written on the document in black and white. You'll see that there are meetings and the majority of the meetings of the committee where you were not part of. If you were part of, you don't even stay to the duration of the report, of that meeting. You would come in and go. You don't stay until the meeting ends. You'll agree with me. You don't. And you always say, it's because we are few. We have to attend this meeting and that meeting. That's you, it's not me. That's what you always say. But I'm not saying, you know, the reason why I mentioned that is because you were just quiet.
Where is this going? Because there are many meetings I attended.
I'm
not too sure where is this going.
Okay.
Can I just say?
In fact, I would like you to tabulate the dates where I was absent.
Chair, can I just say?
I have a right to come in and attend the meeting and for another
It's your right, yes. Right. It is.
You are not going to say anything about anything that we do as a party. The most important thing is our participation.
Okay, Mr. Dr. Kado?
Yeah. Chair, I do regard this as an unfair victimization
exactly,
of a member of the committee.
And
I'm not sure what the purpose of this conversation is. I do believe that members should be able to reject or accept the report and not to give reasons for doing so. And I humbly submit that I don't think this conversation is going anywhere, so could we put a close to it?
Okay, before I come in, Mema Zimbi.
Thank you, Chair. I also wanted to say let us close the matter because it's not about who, but it's about the report. Let us close the matter and agree on the report and proceed because it's not going to take us anywhere.
I don't think I'm victimizing Mr. Mbatha, just to put it into context. I'm not victimizing anybody. I'm not. I was just stating
most
the fact.
Most of the things you are saying here, Chair, they have no relationship with what we've
they
just
do.
Done. No, they don't.
I'm saying it's very worrying for you to keep quiet in a meeting that is supposed to deliberate and conclude on the report that affects your membership of this committee. That is the fact. You keep quiet and at the end, you come in to say you are not going to support the report, whereas you were quiet. And then when being asked why are you not supporting, which part of this report you are not supporting, you say it's because of the party stance. And the reason why I mentioned that you were not part of the meeting is because I said you were quiet. You were never part of the meeting. I thought because you were not part of the meeting, that is the reason that made you keep quiet in the meeting. That is the reason why I mentioned your attendance. And I thought because you were not part of the meetings, that's why you were quiet. But then you then came in to say you were part of the meetings. And that's why I said I will state which meetings you were not part of and which meetings you were part of. There's no victimization there. I was just clarifying why I thought you were not participating. That's all. Yes,
that is
clear.
Chair, you know, all of us here are adults. We don't expect to agree all the time. And if there is any occasion where we think there are differences, it should not be our responsibility to come in and pour petrol so that, the whole thing, worsens and so on. As adults, we help each other so that we resolve our issues. The input of Dr. Kado, I feel, was a little bit unfair on the good work that we've done so far. Because if we suggest that Honorable Mbatha is being victimized, you know, that carries a lot of, weight on it, and it does not augur very well for the relationship that we're trying to build in this committee. We're a family here, and if there are issues, there are other ways of resolving them. And it's important for us to ensure that as we go forward, we find it within ourselves to have that working relationship. I was beginning to get a feeling that the issue is being resolved now, and until the intervention of Dr. Card, I would like to appeal to my comrade, comrade Ndata, not to look at this thing in an adverse way. We'll find other ways of resolving this matter, and I don't think anything is going to appear in the minutes that will be adverse, Baba Mbata. Some of the things needs to be fixed the other way and so on. Even after this meeting, some of the issues can be discussed. We've worked so well thus far. I wouldn't like you to get the impression, you know, that because it has now been supported elsewhere, that you are being victimized. To start believing that you are being, you'll never be victimized. You are one of us. It does not matter that you belong to another party. You are one of us all the time, and we've got a strong history together, and nobody's going to come between us. So
okay.
I suggest that we leave it at that.
Okay. Can we really leave it at that? Because I really feel, Dr. Kado, the word victimization, I've never victimized anybody. And I think you know for sure that you've been part of this meeting. I've never victimized anybody. I think that was very uncalled for you to say that. I was merely trying to clarify a case. And that case, in my opinion, is very clear.
Chair, I think in my case, if you pick on me, that's victimization. And I wasn't absent. I was there from the beginning. And I showed you, both in my words and in my physical expression, that I did not like what you were saying. Because the pursuance of an argument about my attendance, my stance, and the fact that I kept quiet, it has got nothing to do with you. You are a responsible chair of the committee. How I wish to say something, how I say something, if I keep quiet, chair, it has got nothing to do with you. Yours is the smooth presiding over the meeting. If you pick on the fact that I was quiet, that's so unique, and in fact, that's so rich, because I have a right to be quiet. And I will not accept, and I will not roll over here. We are not here to sit and actually babysit your bully. If you pursue an argument that hurts me, I'm going to retaliate. Because I'm sitting here representing a party. You have no right to say to me I was quiet. Quiet for what? For who? I've participated in the entirety of these committees. I have never argued against anyone who's quiet. And by the way, minutes, by their very nature, they've got nothing to do with anyone who's quiet. They've got everything to do with the contributions. Don't bully me.
I think bullying you is out of question. I don't bull people. I was concluding on the matter. You said yourself that you do not support this report. And your not supporting this report has nothing to do with the meeting. I mean, with this report. It has something to do with your party. And I accepted that. But I added that I thought you're not supporting, you're not contributing had everything to do with the fact that you were not part of the meeting. If that hurt you, I apologize. But if it has anything to do with what you think I said, I think you must just withdraw that also, because I don't think it has anything to do. You don't have the basis for that I bully you. You've never had me bullying you. It's not in my nature to bully people. And I think you are wrong. You are misrepresenting me too. If my saying so hurt you, I just want you to, I want to apologize to you. And I don't want ill feelings between us. But I, equally so, would want you also to not misrepresent me. Because I can also talk. It's not that I can't talk. I thought we've resolved this report issue, and the report was adopted unanimously, except but one member of the EFF. That then concludes the meeting. Not the meeting, rather the part on the BRRR. Thank you. Let's break for at least 2 minutes and allow the minister to get to the chair to present the next report. When we come back, can members sit somewhere here and utilize these two chairs, please? Sizocela ke ukuthi also there are other chairs there. Babumbatha, next to you there's a chair. If you can move there so that you shift for others, no babumabika kanjani. Shift for other members if you want to be together.
The connection is ila Babumbatha. Ungakwazi man, awufuni nganti badala man. Ukwathiswa yintoni? Okay, asingadweli on that. Asishiyi. Iza kimi sizokhuluma ngoba mina angeke ngize lapho ku iza la.
Iza ngishilo kwanele.
But now we political meeting kimi. Yindaba.
Morning, how are you?
Quite a struggle because it's a huge document.
Yeah.
Sometimes they get stuck in our side.
Yeah.
But eventually I got it.
Yeah.
Ausgegangen sei, dann war
ich. Dann ist er reich für dich.
Welcome back, members. We'll recall that this is about the sixth year of the implementation of the new growth path, which was adopted, I think it was in October, Minister, of 2010. And if you remember, New Growth Path has its own sector targets that are meant to help our economic growth, and also in creating meaningful job opportunities, and also helping in dealing with issues of inequality and poverty. So that on its own, that is the new growth path, also it's supposed to help the NDP achieve its ideals. I think what we need now is for the opportunity we have now is for the department to tell us how far have they gone, especially in the review of the five-year review of the new growth path. Progress thus far, what actually have they done, what hasn't been possible to do, and what are the resultant causes of that. But above everything, we need to get the remedial plans so that we can see our difficult economic situation improving. So I will hand over to the minister. The minister will be assisted by the acting DG and other executive management members. And I'm told the deputy minister is in the cabinet committee and will be joining us in due course. Minister, may I give you the opportunity then to present to us the progress report on the new growth path, as I welcome you and your Tim, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. And thank you for the opportunity to present on the new growth path. In view of the time, what I would propose to do is to very rapidly summarize what is in the document to give an opportunity for some engagement with the committee. And we table this report, Chairperson, as a preliminary midterm review. And I'm going to start immediately on the substance of the matters, Chairperson. Colleagues may be able to recall that in 2008 and 2009, we had a global economic crisis. That crisis affected South Africa very substantially. And as the new administration came into office, it was confronted with a recession. And there were three interventions. We could call them short and medium and long term. The short-term intervention was a series of immediate measures to stabilize the economy. They were principally captured in a document called Framework of South Africa's Response to the Global Economic Crisis. The second one was an economic strategy, the new growth path. That was a medium-term measure. And the third one was a broader vision for society, the National Development Plan, that is our roadmap to 2030. Chairperson, as you indicated, the NGP was adopted by Cabinet, in fact, in October 2010. And in this presentation, following your request, we do a preliminary review. It is on only a selected list of actions and outcomes, partly because there's so much that has happened in this period, and partly because we've just passed the midterm mark, and we will be adding more information as we pull this together. So to recall, the National Development Plan has a number of areas of focus that deals with the economy, infrastructure, social protection, housing, rural development, environmental issues, healthcare, the nature of the state, education and training, building social cohesion, fighting corruption, and South Africa's external posture. So it's important to recall that, because the first thing I'd like to deal with is just to briefly recall the relationship between the different policies. The next slide deals with the NGP and the action plan. So our overall vision that integrates all aspects of development is the National Development Plan. But to achieve that vision, we have a detailed economic strategy, which is the new growth path. And to give effect to both that vision and that strategy, a series of action plans have been rolled out over the last number of years. They include the 9-point plan, IPAP, the Agriculture Policy Action Plan, and the National Infrastructure Plan. I should make the point, Chairperson, that because life is not always neat, the sequence within which we did that doesn't correspond to vision, strategy, and action plans. There were some action plans already in place. They were modified as we developed the strategy, and that was modified as we dealt with the vision. That is just to deal with the background. The new growth path itself, the core idea is to place employment at the heart of economic policy, to target 5 million new jobs by 2020, I should note that this target has been revised by the NDP to 11 million jobs by 2030. And the means is to change the structure of the economy to have more labor-absorbing, greener growth. And we identified a number of jobs drivers, policy drivers, resource drivers, and institutional drivers that in combination can have the effect of changing the structure of the economy. The next slide sets out the 10 jobs drivers. They summarized a little bit differently in the document, but if you carefully look at them, they deal with infrastructure, the mining value chain, agriculture value chain, manufacturing, tourism and business services, knowledge-based sectors, the green economy, the social economy, the public sector, and African regional development. There's also a policy package and resource and institutional drivers, and we list those on the slide. Today we will report on key areas of employment, deal with some selected jobs drivers, and identify aspects of the microeconomic package. I note also, Chairperson, a point on data sources, that for the aggregates we've used the Quarterly Labour Force Survey, which is the most comprehensive survey in the country, and that looks at households. I want to point, though, that there are some discrepancies between that survey results and the Quarterly Employment Survey, the QES, which provides information gleaned from a survey of businesses. But it's a smaller survey, and it does not include the informal economy. And then we've used data from agencies and departments to illustrate specific performance. Looking at the overall employment storyline over the period, before we adopted the new growth path, there were 13.6 million South Africans employed. By the end of June this year, there were 15.5 million South Africans employed. That means that net new job creation was 1.89 million jobs, or to round it up, 1.9 million jobs. So the question is, where were these jobs created? 1.1 million of the jobs were created in the private sector, and about 750,000 jobs in the public sector, that's government and utilities. If we break it down by sector, the single narrow sector with the largest jobs growth was general government, followed by private business services, construction, agriculture, mining, private households, transport, and so on. I'll put an asterisk on mining, and I will come back to the mining data later. If we look at the provincial distribution between the adoption of the new growth path and the latest information, the province with the strongest jobs growth in total numbers is Gauteng, with 622,000, followed by Limpopo and Western Cape. On a percentage basis, the strongest jobs growth was in Limpopo with 41% growth, followed by Mpumalanga with 20%. And both of these provinces, of course, had the two biggest single infrastructure projects in them, namely the Medupi and Kusile power stations, and then followed by Gauteng. If we look at the global context, when the NGP was adopted, we had just been in the midst of the global economic crisis. We did some projections based on IMF and World Bank data and did our jobs numbers on how it would affect the South African economy. It is very interesting, these graphs, because what they show is that consistently the forecasts that globally the public institutions and the IFIs, International Financial Institutions, have given have been more optimistic compared to actual performance. So if colleagues look at the screen here, this blue line here shows what everybody said at the time would be the growth rate for advanced economies, the forecast. In reality, the actual rate was substantially below. So if one looks at 2012 as an example, the expectation was that we would have probably about 2.6, 2.7% growth, as it were, we're only at about 1.7 growth, so 100 basis point lower growth. And the same happened on the African continent. Even though Africa had relatively robust growth in this period, the actual forecast is in the blue line and real performance is in the red line. And you'll see a not insignificant, fairly important divergence between what was forecast and what was actually achieved. The next slide sets out South Africa's own GDP seasonally adjusted in constant rand. This slide 14 looks at the index. So what we did was for the year 2000, we represented manufacturing as 100. Then we say, okay, if you say it's 100, how does it change over this period? So if we look at manufacturing, it's the blue line. It broadly grew output, not jobs, but output, from 2000 to, one sees here, about 2007, 2008. Then the financial crisis hits us, and there's a sharp contraction in manufacturing growth. And then it begins to recover. On agriculture, you see relatively weak performance. Financial crisis, it spikes, and then a gentle upward turn until the drought hits us. Mining, bit of a growth in the latter half of the period up to the financial crisis, a sharp drop, and then the beginning of recovery. But as honorable members will see, by the end of the period, on the index basis, we were no better than at the start of the period. When the NGP was done and we did a presentation at the time, and the chairperson is probably the only remaining member of the committee for the entire period, will recall this slide where we classified the jobs drivers and we said some things are good for growth, some things are good for jobs, some things are good for growth and jobs, some things are not good either for growth or jobs. So as an example, speculative financial activities, very energy intensive refineries that essentially push up the effective price of energy for the economy, illicit economic activities, they're not good for growth, they're not good for jobs. Something that's good for growth, mining, refining, capital and high-tech industries, auto and capital goods. Something that's good for jobs are your EPWPs, your home-based care, low-skill services, small-scale retail, call centers, subsistence farming, and so on. And this is really the key quad, which is activities are great for jobs and for growth. There would be things like light manufacturing, clothing and textiles, processing, light assembly, your mid-skill services like health, tourism, software, media, and certain kinds of business process services. And then agriculture and smallholder farming in particular, and construction. This is a very interesting slide, because what we did here was we did a comparison. One of the key things that the NGP focused on, there's a whole section of it, is how do we increase the labor intensity of growth? Because if you simply look at GDP growth, it may not have, it's not a good proxy for development. It's important, economies must grow because they generate resources, but if your growth is not inclusive, meaning it's not jobs rich, it doesn't pull in large numbers of people, then the effect on an economy and a society could be limited. So one of the key objectives was to see, can we increase the employment per billion rand of GDP that's generated? And over the period from 2010, the blue line is the GDP, and the red line is jobs. So you can see here that jobs increased by, call it 14%, and GDP increased by 11.2%. In other words, we became a little bit more labor intensive over this period than we were at the start of the period. So before I look at the jobs drivers, this is a snapshot, an overview of what's happened to employment in the period from the adoption of the NGP to date. Now, in the NGP, honorable members will recall, there are these what we call jobs drivers. So we've taken a number of these jobs drivers and provided a little bit of feel of the kind of work done in this period. By its nature, it's a little bit selective. It doesn't cover everything, but I hope it's representative enough to give honorable members and the committee a feel of government's work on the issues. So if we take infrastructure as a jobs driver, the infrastructure program precedes the NGP. Infrastructure's been a big part of South Africa's story, but a significant underinvestment in infrastructure during the 80s and most of the 90s. A spike in infrastructure spending in preparation for the World Cup, but principally the highways in Gauteng, the Gautrain, and the Stadiobul. Those are the main ones at the time. Investment in infrastructure from the NGP period began to shift. First, it grew by about 4.5% per annum in money terms, but also infrastructure became a lot more broad-based. So a lot more money into energy, into water infrastructure, and into some of the other areas that we begin to cover. Employment in construction grew to about 1.46 million in September 2015. Private sector participation has been stepped up. Pipeline of mega projects are in progress. We focus more on localization, but now we face some fiscal constraints, and the growth in funding is anticipated to be slowing down, and we currently have 1.3 million people employed in construction. Look at the investment story here. The green line is private business investment, the red line is public corporations, and the blue line is general government. This is just capital spending, so this is a fairly good proxy for infrastructure, because with the exception of a few smaller spending by government, most of government capital spending is in infrastructure. So what the story indicates is, from this period of 2010, a broad growth in infrastructure compared to, say, 2008, the infrastructure spending is fairly significantly higher. From the heydays before the financial crisis, private business capital spending has been lower. Some of the big infrastructure projects include Medupi and Kusile, the 1 billion invested per working day, more than 200,000 jobs in PICC infrastructure, and 18 strategic integrated projects. Part of what we do in infrastructure is to use it to boost other parts of the economy. So, for example, localization efforts ensure that state-owned companies and departments have some pressure on them to buy from South African manufacturers, so that more of that rand that is spent is captured in the domestic economy. Moving to agriculture and agro-processing, agriculture lost jobs in the initial years in the new democracy, and government scaled back a lot of the support that was in place for the big commercial farms. Colleagues will recall the price support. They had all these, the maize board and the wheat board and the sugar board and so on. And coinciding with that period was a significant decline in the number of farms and the number of people employed in farming, also accompanied by quite significant mechanization. After the NGP, there was a package of interventions. The rate of growth increased for a few years. Employment grew in most of this period. Regional integration has been deepened, but we now have the challenge of drought. One of the key things has been the adoption of the Agriculture Policy Action Plan. It was adopted in March 2015. The slide indicates the key areas in APAP, and it aims to bring 1 million hectares of underused land into full production. This year sets out just snapshots in 1 year, rural development invested about $1.2 billion to recapitalize farming. If we take this over the entire NGP period, it would be significantly higher. And as we pull the preliminary data into a final report, we'll be updating these beyond the annual snapshots. Because we're dealing now with the drought, you see here also the drought relief, both for smallholder farmers and the aggregates. Quite a significant support on the tariff side, quite a few tariffs that were raised. Some factoids, as they call it, 5 billion rand in export of fish and fish products, quite a bit of inspections of declared fish products. But with agriculture goes the agro-processing value chain. It's not just what we grow, but also can we process it locally between the farm and the consumer's mouth. What jobs can we create there? So we've given a few case studies from the AVGRI commitment to support farmers with grain storage discounts, loans, training, and poultry farmer assistance. Honorable members will recall it was a 90 million rand deal, and then we've put some additional guesstimates on the value of some of the other benefits there. Coca-Cola committed to employment localization and funding for emerging farmers, and one of the specific commitments they've made is to procure at least 80% of apples, pears, and grapes for appetizer from local producers, and to host annual procurement conferences with suppliers. Further case studies were on the soya crushing plants. Over the NGP period, quite a lot of focus on soya planting, and we now have Africa's biggest soya crushing plant in the Lekwa municipality, that's in Standerton, and we have a second one in Bronkhorstspruit that is able to convert about 250,000 tons of soya beans to high-quality oil cake. Other examples is the Unilever plant that opened in Midrand to make ice cream. Fabco was supported to establish and market the homegrown brand, and aquaculture, a number of measures here. So these are just little examples, illustrations of the broader storyline on agriculture. We also signed the MOU with Nestle to set up a chicory production facility so that we can have chicory as a complement to coffee. There is some coffee production, and we import quite a bit of our coffee. On the IDC front, the IDC invested about 3 billion rand in agriculture and agro-processing in this period, and honorable members will see that quite a bit of this was in the meat, fish, fruit, veg, oils and fats value chain, with dairy products also significant, and then a smaller number for grain, starches and animal feeds. Beverage, only 24 million of the total. This total year, the breakdown is about 1.2 billion, and that covers a period of IDC funding. This aggregate year is for the NGP period. Moving to mining and beneficiation, we had the commodity boom in the 2000s until the introduction of the NGP. In fact, just short of the NGP's introduction, the global economic crisis led to a significant immediate drop in mineral demand. It recovered thereafter as China shifted more of its spending to infrastructure. And literally from about 2010 or so, 2011, China was the single biggest generator of new demand for minerals. And as China, of course, slowed down and shifted, it revealed that what one could call for now structural demand for for certain industrial minerals are much lower than it was in the boom years of the early 2000s. We've also had in the period rising input costs and very strained labor relations. In fact, the big strikes over this period has been in the mining sector. Steel production has fallen globally, which then of course impacts on iron ore, and industry has lost a large number of jobs, and employment in mining was about 500,000 in June. Government interventions included the Mining Pakisa plan, a package to stabilize the steel industry, local procurement designations, efforts to stabilize labor relations, new infrastructure to support mining, a scrap metal pricing system to support beneficiation, and the designation of an SEZ for metal beneficiation. We've had a 56% increase in investment in mining for the six-year period, but still off a relatively low base. And total mining jobs, according to the QLFS, increased over the period taken as a whole, with the largest gain being in platinum. And this breaks down the data where job losses in coal and quarrying and job gains in platinum, gold, other mining and iron ore, as well as diamonds. But I've put a big health warning to the data here. Because if you take the quarterly employment survey, which is a different survey by Stats SA, the picture for mining changes. So we're going to have to work with both of these. It's not mining, by the way, it's not the only area where there's a fairly sharp difference between these two, but mining is the most noticeable because it turns a positive to a negative. So I want to bring this to the committee's attention to bear in mind when we deal with the data. This slide indicates on the right-hand side the iron ore prices. So in 2006, it was $77 a ton. At the height of the commodity boom, it was about $146. So it's a doubling of prices. So industry, mining industry, was doing very well in that period. And then you have the slump, and we're now down to $53. So this is a very good indication of where the pressures are in mining. We've also provided a bit of information on the Mining Pakisa. Some of the areas dealing with beneficiation has been to stabilize the steel value chain. ITAC introduced a preferential price system on scrap metals. We designated, by designated it means we instruct all public entities to buy locally manufactured steel power pylons, rail rolling stock, solar water heaters, working vessels, conveyancing pipes, and so on. We fast-tracked the tariff investigations by the trade authorities on steel products, and there was support for the Score Metals Group. In this period, Anglo basically felt that Score was not a viable business, wanted to exit. We were quite concerned that essentially the industrial operation would be closed. The IDC has been a holding operation shareholder, and we are now entering the market to look for a technology partner. Some of the work in beneficiation has been to act against monopolies. One of the biggest and more significant monopolies is in fact in the sector. It's an upstream steel producer. And in this period, at the end of this period, it was fined $1.5 billion fine. It had a limit on its pricing arrangements through capping its earnings before interest and tax. And they were obliged to commit to invest just over 4.5 billion rand to modernize their plants. So one of the things, Chairperson and honorable members, that we've noticed with a number of plants in the economy is underinvestment in past years mean that those plants are often quite uncompetitive. And in good years, you don't see it because everybody is just booming. But when the slowdown or the turnaround comes and there's more pressure on margins, then it's only the fittest, most competitive plants that survive. So you've seen this in Highveld Steel. We've seen the pressures in ArcelorMittal. We've seen in SCOR also the challenge of underinvestment in the past. This slide is just to give honorable members a little bit of a case study of rail rolling stock. It's been in the news often for the wrong reasons, with imports of locomotives when we have quite a significant manufacturing capability in the country. And we see the manufacture of locomotives in South Africa and also the import numbers. One of the ways of dealing with mining is to find more applications, industrial applications, for minerals that South Africa mine in big numbers. We are the world's biggest producer of platinum. And one of the significant, there are two big users of platinum at the moment. One is the auto sector. They use it essentially to make catalytic converters that reduces the emissions in a car. And the second one, of course, is the jewelry industry that uses platinum on a much smaller scale than we hope can develop with time. But there are three examples of us investing either the private sector or in partnership with government to use platinum to generate energy. So these are fuel cell technologies. Here's an example, underground mining. Here's one in a forklift, and here is one in electric mobility, where there are different kinds of fuel cells being tested to see can we get the pricing to be competitive with traditional fuels. Turning next to manufacturing, manufacturing has been very hard hit by the global crisis. Value add declined sharply in that period. Manufacturing, in fact, even before that period, manufacturing jobs declined during the global crisis by about 300,000. So roughly speaking, one out of three jobs lost were manufacturing jobs. We've had quite a number of sector interventions. In some cases, they just stabilized the sectors. So as they were hemorrhaging, we tried to get them into stability. In a few cases, we've had some success where value add rose, even though jobs didn't grow. And that's one of the challenges. I don't have that slide. Oh, there's that slide. Let me just first recall as an overview. Our policy support since the NGP adoption was through regular updates of IPAP. A sector strategy for clothing, textiles, and footwear has been finalized. We've adjusted the car sector strategy in this period. There's been some interventions in the chemical value chain, particularly with investments by the IDC and through some competition policy measures. There were also sector interventions in steel that I've covered, cross-cutting things where government is buying a lot more locally than it did before, and investment support through the IDC funding envelope. And then towards the end of this period, we introduced a Black Industrialist Program to get more Black South Africans in manufacturing as makers of goods. This is a very interesting slide because what it shows is that manufacturing output rose by about 7.7%, but jobs dropped by 5.7%. So how would one explain something like this, that you're having a growth in your output, but a decline in your employment? Well, this is one of the problematics that I've given the department now to try to get a bit more work done on this. Across the world, we've seen an important development, which is manufacturing growth generally is not accompanied by significant new manufacturing jobs. There are exceptions to it. When China industrialized and they set up a very large light manufacturing industry, the employment rose dramatically. And this is happening also wherever people are targeting light manufacturing. But once you've got a manufacturing base, essentially your growth is through productivity enhancement. You get new machinery, and probably the area that has most consistently improved productivity over, call it a 50, 60-year period, is manufacturing. And so each million rand, if you like, that you invest is making more things today than it did 10 years ago, because you've got better machines, you've got more trained workers and so on. So really the only way to significantly increase manufacturing growth is to expand your markets aggressively. If you're going to aim at the same markets and you're going to aim for the same production levels, roughly speaking, inevitably you're going to have job losses. So there's a dilemma and a challenge in manufacturing that we must deal with. The other part of manufacturing that I would like the team to do a little bit more work on is to see how is the composition of manufacturing changed in this period. Are we more labor intensive? Are we less labor intensive? In other words, is capital shifting to light manufacturing or is it shifting to heavy manufacturing? So the jury's still out. I've got quite contradictory messages and assessments on that. So we need to do a little bit more work on that. The next one is IPEP. IPEP was a big intervention as part of the work of the NGP. And IPEP seeks to diversify the economy, promote labor-absorbing sectors, contribute to industrial development, and move towards a knowledge-based economy. This slide shows IDC disbursements versus jobs for each of the IPEP sectors in the period 2013 to 2016. So it's a three-year, it's not a five-year period. It's a three-year period, and it just gives a little snapshot. So in the final work that we do, we would now want to take this period for the entire 5 years and see what the trend lines are. And over this period, the IDC disbursements created or saved about 55,000 jobs in these different sectors. And if we look at the breakdown, honorable members will see them by year and by sector. Now, if we go beyond the aggregates to the sectors, clothing, textile, leather, and footwear used to be a very big sector in the economy. And it has slowed down initially in the late 80s and then dramatically decreased in size in the 90s and the early 2000s. At its height, it was losing about 15 to 18,000 jobs a year. And principally because of the combination of lower tariffs and China's entry into global markets, because China in that period entered the World Trade Organization. So in the NGP period, we tried to get the sector more stabilized. We introduced a competitiveness improvement program to try to lift productivity in the industry through better machines, industrial engineering and training. And we developed a cash-based production incentive program to support sectors. And here are some of the numbers. There's about 76,000 jobs that are supported by the support programs. And the industry is now in a broadly stable employment situation. But now the challenge is how do we turn it from stable to growing jobs in the sector. In turning to the next sector, which is cars, trucks, taxis, buses and trains, or what we can call transport equipment sectors, this has been a bit of a success story on the industrial front. If we take cars, trucks and buckies, in the period of the NGP, if we aggregate all of the cars and buckies that we've made in this 5 years and we compare it with what we made in the previous 5 years, it's grown by about 11%. That's the annual average in the 5 years compared to the prior 5 years. So just to clarify, 11% growth of the 5 year period as a whole compared to the previous 5 years. Exports, however, grew much faster. So what was essentially happening is we became more specialized. We were going for fewer models and exporting more of that so that we could try to get economies of scale and reduce prices. Employment in assembly plants is about 31,000 workers, and in component manufacturing about 82,000 jobs. We're currently making about over half a million vehicles annually. Taxis is a good success story. At the start of the NGP, we were importing all of our taxis. During that period, we developed a taxi manufacturing capability with two factories, and we've now produced 46,000 taxis locally. Buses, we've also moved from being a big importer of buses to being a significant assembler of buses, and about 1,400 buses have been assembled in South Africa. Trains I've covered earlier, and then yellow metals, we've now put yellow metals, these are these big trucksters that you see, these dumpsters that you see that are used in the construction, mining industries. There's now a program to support them. They're manufactured in Richards Bay, and it's quite an iconic South African company, Bell Equipment, that is the big producer locally. This slide just sums up what's happened on the policy side. During the NGP period, we shifted from the old incentive scheme to the new one, which is called the Automotive Production and Development Program. We did duty rebates, and that was complemented with investments. So the IEDC, for example, invested $4 billion, supported Busmark, and so on. Moving next to the green economy, four key interventions in this period on renewable energy, on energy efficiency, on recycling, and on environmental maintenance. I won't cover each of these in the following slides, but these are the main ones. On the renewable energy, we've procured a significant increase in our energy supply now comes from renewable energy. It's drawn quite significant investment. This says private investments, but actually it should be private and public investments, because some of this money is from the IDC, the DBSA, and a little bit, not much, but a little bit from Eskom. The jobs and the megawatts that are still planned. IDC itself invested almost 19 billion rand in green energy, of which renewable energy itself accounts for 15 billion. And the other big one was fuel-based energy and biofuels. Tourism and business services is another jobs drivers. Three key interventions are highlighted. The one is to turn South Africa into a much bigger platform for business process services, these call centers and so on. The second one is the expansion of jobs as a result of increased tourism, both global tourism and domestic tourism. And the third one is developing South Africa as a film location of choice for making of movies, global movies as well as local movies. On the BPS side, in this period about 35,000 people employed, additional people employed. We've also focused this a lot more on youth. So there's now a directive that's been issued in terms of the Youth Employment Accord for BPS services to be at least 80% young people. We've exceeded that target, as honorable members will see there. Tourism, we've had a significant increase in tourism. The aggregates are almost 2 million more people visited South Africa in 2015 compared to before the NGP period. The top three tourist nationalities are from Zimbabwe, Lesotho, and Mozambique. On the continent, and excluding the continent, they're the UK, the US, and Germany. Now, when we look, these are just your total numbers, but if you look at growth, the biggest growth has now actually come from some of the BRICS countries. Chinese and Brazilian tourism numbers have grown quite significantly. In the final report, we'll put some of that up. We've had a 14% increase in tourists from outside the continent in this period. Films, filmmaking is quite a big job, creator, because it's not just the actors. It's also set building, location support, catering, editing, costume making. There's a range of services, post-production services and pre-production services, and of course the work that's done in the filming itself. Cape Town Film Studio was opened in this period. It's a world-class facility. A Joburg Film Studio will be opened shortly. There's a very long list of movies supported. They include Long Walk to Freedom. For fans of Mad Max, you would know that Mad Max 4 was filmed locally. And Tsotsi, of course, which won us an Oscar in the foreign film category. The DTI reports that as much as 81,000 jobs are supported along the film value chain. The next jobs drive is knowledge-based sectors, and our key interventions is spending on research and development, investment in new economy projects, use of public procurement, and university-led research. We pulled together a few key metrics on this slide, and there's more that we would be using in future. But just to take honorable members through these, our university enrollment in 2014, because a lot of our figures are 2014 in the latest results, so I wanted to give a comparator, was about 969,000 students. The ones in science, engineering, and technology were 287,000. The PhDs awarded before the NGP was adopted was about 1,400. The PhDs awarded in the latest year that we have information for is 2,200. The PhDs in science, engineering, and technology, that's what the SET stands for, was 612. Now, that's quite an important indicator of whether we're building the capability of a knowledge-based economy. So they're early signs. You won't immediately see it in your investments, but when you begin to build your skill space, you can then get your investments to follow. R&D funding in 2013-14 was just over 25 billion rand. The South Africa's science publications, so these are peer-reviewed publications, as a percentage of the world total before the NGP was 0.67. The latest data is 0.81, so quite a significant rise in the total percentage of world scientific publications that emanate from South Africa. One negative spot for us is we're not getting our R&D spending as a percent of GDP up. It was 0.74 in 2010, it's only 0.73 now, and we need to move, really, if you want to be a knowledge-based economy, you need to move to about 2% of GDP. South African patents in 2010 was 116, and in 2014 there were 152. I've put some of this information in, among others, because of the suggestion in the committee. I think it was Honorable Atkinson who made the suggestion that we should be taking the fourth industrial revolution and all that it entails and begin more systematically to look at technology and economic growth and economic development. Moving on, we've given a few case studies here of one knowledge-based sector, which is pharmaceuticals, what we've done on the triple PFA regulations, the designation to require public authorities to buy locally. We've pointed here to medical technologies such as the Lodox and Capray machines. We've pointed to the simpler new investment and the Dismed plant in Midrand. The next jobs driver is African integration. And here we've identified seven key interventions: the FTA, Free Trade Area negotiations, exports, outward investments, South African components in joint ventures, IDC and DBSA investments, electricity and water, imports and exports, and support for infrastructure investment across the African continent. So on the FTA, the talks are ongoing, and if we can pull that together, when we pull that together, it will be 600 million people in a free trade area. About 250,000 South African jobs are created because of our exports to the rest of the continent. In 2014, the rest of Africa, for the first time, exceeded 30% of South Africa's total exports, and we have put in there some information on what are the key export categories, what we export to the rest of the continent, what we import from the rest of the continent. 2015 was another important year because it's the first year that the South Africa's exports to the rest of the continent overtook any other region. So honorable members will see there that exports to the rest of the continent accounted for 29.2% of our exports. Asia came a narrow second at 29.1, followed by Europe at 23, and United States or the Americas at 9.7. We've put in two tables to say which countries we mainly export to. So colleagues will see there in 2010 it was in order Botswana, Namibia, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Zambia. Today it's Namibia, Botswana, Zambia, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. So not a significant change in the composition. The main exports in 2015 were refined oil, cars and trucks, iron and steel structures, coal and electricity. Export to the rest of the continent is important to South African jobs. We give you the export numbers. And actually, if one looks at this, the direct jobs that South Africa benefits from through exports to the rest of the continent is even more significant than this chart shows, because this is just export numbers. So with Europe, for example, we run a trade deficit with Europe. So in all probability, the net effect of our trade with the European Union would either be significantly smaller job growth or, in fact, potentially even net job losses. But with the continent, we run a surplus. So you have a very significant benefit here as a result of trade with the continent. If we look at Asia also, I don't have Asia as a category, but I've got BRICS. We run an enormous import account on light manufacturing with China. So what we gain on jobs by exporting iron ore, we lose by the importation of finished goods. So the point we're making here is African integration is a critical element of our job strategy. Some of what we import, we have to import. We can't make everything locally. There are capital goods that we have to import. But Africa is a great jobs driver for the South African economy. Here we put, we've given some examples of DBSA investment in the rest of the continent on the road project that's indicated here, and a customs administration work to have a special economic zone along the Bait Bridge gateway. The IDC, this map indicates how widespread IDC investments is in the rest of the continent. Quite a lot of this is in infrastructure-linked activities, but some of it is in manufacturing itself. But you'll find the infrastructure like ports, some electricity projects, and they complement it with transport projects, as colleagues can see here, power generation, telecoms, and so on. There are also key agriculture and manufacturing projects here. On the policy interventions at the macroeconomic level, we've had a broadly expansionary fiscal policy over the period taken as a whole. And monetary policy's big challenge has been to, on the one hand, contain inflation, but also to manage monetary policy in a global low monetary policy environment. That's been one of the key challenges. We've achieved a competitive exchange rate in this period. On the social partner side, we've had social accords on youth employment, localization, green economy skills, and basic education, as well as one in the mining sector. And dialogue on the national minimum wage and labor relations. On the microeconomic side, there are 10 policy packages in the NGP. We've given a little bit more airspace to three of these. On competition, we've covered some of this previously to the committee, the action against cartels in construction, the work on Vodacom and Neotel merger, on infrastructure, the employment and local production components to competition policy, the food the issues around the work that we've done on poultry and bread, but also the inputs for the build program like cement, access to small businesses to retail markets, and then the case study of AB InBev, the penalties imposed, the public-related conditions, and the jobs saved. On the trade policy, before the NGP, trade focused mainly on issues of market access. We've now gone for a much more nuanced policy. We've got tariff regulations with clear employment and investment criteria. There's implementation of innovative instruments to save jobs. The SADC EU Economic Partnership Agreement, ITAC lowered tariffs on 56 items, either through a permanent reduction or through a rebate facility, and increased it on 37 tariff items. On small and medium enterprises, in the NGP period, we set up and established CIFA. President announced the Minister of Small Business Development. CIFA itself disbursed 3 billion rand over this period, and the IDC another 9 billion for SMME funding, so about 12 billion over this period for small and medium-sized enterprises, and then the state procurement efforts. So if we look at the 10 microeconomic elements, we've covered industrial policy, rural development, competition on skills. I should just make the point, even though we haven't put slides here on skills, much bigger focus now on TVET colleges and the better use of CETA funds, plus two social accords on skills. On enterprise development, we've said some things on small business. Broad-based black economic empowerment has principally been the industrialist program, and I think the other areas have been covered. This slide, honourable members, just does a quick snapshot on resource drivers. In the 5 years before the NGP, the IDC approved 39 billion rand. In the 5 years after the NGP, it did 66 billion. So quite a significant, from an average of 7.5 billion a year to an average of about 13 billion a year. The same pattern with the disbursements. In fact, it's even sharper. The annual average grew from just under 5 billion to just over 11 billion. On some very preliminary conclusions, the NGP aimed to prioritize policy work on job creation. There's been comprehensive sector strategies, key jobs drivers, agriculture. We've seen quite a big jobs growth. And but for the drought, our expectation was that it would still increase. Infrastructure and construction has been a big growth sector in this period. And then we're looking for evidence of the softer growth. So in business services, it's been one very big jump there, but when you begin to disaggregate it, it's a mix of sectors. So we're looking where can we see the high value growth in business services. Challenges, the end of the commodity boom, so prices are under strain, production is under strain, it comes with fiscal pressures, and those limit some of the programs of the NGP. For example, a big part of the NGP and the NDP growth would be through programs like public employment programs. There's still opportunities to implement NGP measures. The social pact is the big one, that while we did sector accords, we haven't yet got an all-encompassing growth, jobs, investment, wages, accord in the society. We can still expand infrastructure investment. It's an area that the PICC and Treasury is working together. There's further opportunities to localize state procurement. We've got our policies in place, still a lot of things falling through the cracks. There's opportunities for better management of resource allocations, for example, getting more impact on spending on small business, industrial incentives and skills. And then, of course, issues of improved performance by the state, dealing with the delivery issues, dealing with integrity issues, and, of course, going for balanced development. So, Chairperson, as honorable members would see, it is really snapshots with areas that we would need to be filling out as we complete the mid-term review. This month, in fact, is the anniversary. So we will be doing some more work now going forward. So that's the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. I guess, members, we're happy to get this presentation because it represents, I think, the core of our work. In as far as oversight is concerned. And I think the discussions now will indicate whether this is, whether we're happy with the work done thus far, or we feel more could be done. And unfortunately, we don't have that much time. I don't know if within this few minutes we can sacrifice another 5 minutes just for this discussion. Or for questions of clarity to the minister, and then because this will be an ongoing, you know, discussion, not something that is going to end today. We're expecting that as time goes on, we'll get at least on a bi-yearly basis get a progress report from the minister. May we get a clarity seeking questions from members? Mr. Atkinson, Dr. Kado, Mr. Ditliani, in that order, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, Minister, for your presentation as well. Minister, in the presentation, there was a slide that indicated the investment into infrastructure, and I think it was private enterprise or private industry is still the largest investor, but we see that the graph has come down quite a lot, and they almost are investing as much as government. And that's also linked to the issues around R&D as well, where you said we should be aiming at 2%, and I think we're on about 0.7% at the moment as well. So I think those two, in a sense, are tied in, because we need to get private enterprises to get off their big cash pile and to invest, basically. So my question to you is, what can be done by the department and by government to encourage private enterprise to invest both in R&D and infrastructure, and in fact in the overall economy as well. The second question relates to the Cape Town Film Studios, which we did an oversight visit of about a year and a half ago. And on the day that we were there, all the studios were being used and was completely full, and obviously we've seen great success there as well. So my question to you is, are there plans to expand it? And I was just wondering if you could give us a little bit more information about the Johannesburg Film Studios that are due to open. And just in conclusion, I'd just like to mention something quite interesting, which could probably be encompassed within the Fourth Industrial Revolution. But when I was coming in this morning, there was an item on the radio about the fact that the smallest pacemaker that's ever been made was inserted in a patient in Cape Town. And the really impressive part of it is that it's actually happened in South Africa and has happened here, basically. So I think there's a good mark for us on that one. Thank you.
Thank you. I didn't get the last part. Was on what?
There was an information point on the radio this morning about the fact that the smallest pacemaker for hearts that's ever been produced was actually made and inserted in the last couple of days in Cape Town, so which is quite an advance for South Africa. Thank you.
Dr. Cardinal, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Minister. This is a midterm review, so presumably it's an opportunity to reevaluate targets. And I wanted to know, given the constraints on growth and given the growth forecast, is the target of 5 million new jobs by 2020 still realistic? And if it's not, will this midterm review process provide an opportunity to revise that figure? Secondly, the means to achieve that target of 5 million new jobs is identified on your slide 5 as, quote, change the structure of the economy to have more labor-absorbing growth. I wanted to find out from you what you regard as the major constraints to labor absorption, and in particular, what is the EDD doing, I know you touched on it briefly in some of the slides, to ensure that the labor market becomes more flexible? Is the department engaged in specific activities to withdraw restrictive labor legislation or to introduce legislation that might make the labor market more flexible and that might foster an environment that promotes foreign and domestic investment? And in particular, do you believe that a national minimum wage might serve to hamper employment growth? And then finally, on the subject of the accords, which you touched on too, will the accords like the Skills Accord and the Youth Employment Accord be subject to their own individual medium-term reviews? And I wanted to ask you, given that I've mentioned those two particular accords, the Skills Accord and the Youth Employment Accord, what effect do you think that the current crisis in the higher education sector and the university shutdowns might have on youth employment over the remaining 4 years of the new growth path? Thanks.
Thanks, Dr. Kleene.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Minister, for the presentation. A few questions here. The first one relates to the soya crushing plant in Standerton. Some time ago when we visited the plant, it was just starting. So we were informed at that time that they had to import most of the beans from Brazil. Now, I think it has been operational for some time now. Can we be told as to what that situation is like? What is the output now? Have they been able to add on, which will then relate, obviously, to more jobs being created for the locals? And Minister, we appreciate the initiative, of government to try and protect jobs that are there. And we also understand the reason why you are not letting go of score metals, because you want to protect those jobs there. You are looking for some technical partners and so on. It is the progress that is being made in that regard to try and find the partner. What is the situation exactly there? Because the longer it drags, the more complicated the situation is. But we appreciate the fact that you are trying to save jobs there. On the African integration program, we appreciate the fact that we are exporting 29.2% to Africa, is in excess of what we are exporting to other parts of the world. And we are naming the top countries that we are exporting to: Namibia, Botswana, Zambia, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe. What is the situation like in countries like Angola? Angola has got some minerals, has got some oil there and so on. What is going on there? Can we be told there what the situation is like? And finally, on the film industry, I hear here that the DTI says about 81,000 jobs created. Have we got an idea what kind of jobs those are? Do do they relate to the development of the local artists? I know the thrust is to bring international artists, the actors and actresses, to come to the country, which gives us, you know, that prestige. However, at the same time, we need to have some way of monitoring the kind of growth that we're making locally for our cultural workers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tetlan. Mema Tsimbi?
Thank you very much, Chair. I also like to appreciate the presentation by the Minister. I've got just two questions. One, it's on the job driver manufacturing sector. As we see manufacturing output going up, but the manufacturing jobs going down. Mainly the reason is that the new technologies that are being implemented. Now mine is there anything that we can do to put a clause that says, please don't use the new technologies so as to increase the employment rate or to reduce the job losses? That's one. And two, on the crisis that we are really facing on the hashtag fees must fall, in us saying that youth are employable, is there anything that we can do in terms of the companies that are found guilty of anti-competitive behavior in saying out of the fine that we have imposed to you, can we please dedicate 10% to the education of the country now? Is that possible or not possible, Minister? Thank you.
Thanks, Mema Tsimbi. Thank you. In the interest of time, let me just ask two questions. I think one will be also related to manufacturing on the lines of what Mema Tsimbi has asked. You know, the APDP program minister, I just want to find out whether the type of investment compared to the jobs created is the gelling? Are we happy that we, on the one hand, retaining the companies, these foreign companies in the country, and we're incentivizing them, but at the same time, whether they're creating the necessary jobs that we need to be seeing creating? Are we happy with the level of job creation in relation to that? And the other one, of course, was related to the mechanization versus labor intensiveness, because that might be one of the areas that is really impeding job creation in the sector, automobile sector. I would be also along the line of Mema Tsimbi, because I had put that question to say, why wouldn't we really put an emphasis on really allowing people to use more labor intensive, you know, efforts rather than putting more machinery? And then second, the other question is related to it is one and the same thing, because that is the our investment, the IDC investment vis-a-vis the jobs created. I mean, when you compare $4 billion with 13,000 jobs, is it really what we're looking for? Or we could be investing that money elsewhere where we would get more value out of it. I'm not undermining the value this investors are coming with in our economy, but I'm just I just want to find out if really we're happy with that. The other one is 81,000 jobs within the film value chain. I think one is appreciative of the fact that now when you open the TV, especially those who have the decoders, various decoders, whether it's from MultiChoice or it's from other companies, you can see that South African films are beginning to show now, and as compared to others, those that were really flooding our market. I'm happy about that, but as maybe Honorable Klein has asked, do we feel that is enough, or do we have a strategy, or just apart from opening this Joburg one that is still coming and the one that is here in Cape Town, which I want to agree with him. The one in Cape Town is more foreign-based, actually is attracting foreign films than the local ones. Whether Joburg one is going to do the same, and whether we're going to be doing the same also, opening new studios around areas like Devon and so forth. Those, unfortunately, were my questions that I needed to find out. And generally, Minister, I just wanted to check on the framework for South African response to economic crisis. That framework was very good framework, and because the crisis kept on really preventing many of our activities to thrive, economic activities to thrive, even to date, I had thought that perhaps would get as the report back on that framework at large. And as you had said, this was just a short to medium term measure. It would have been important to check whether it has worked, and out of that plan, how many jobs have we saved? What lessons are we learning from that? And going forward, what are we taking from it so that we can also prevent some of the things that we might have created ourselves? That is what I thought in general. Perhaps you need to look at going forth in your next reports. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sorry, Minister, just to interrupt a bit. Members, it's up to you. We have asked questions. Minister has a sense of what we wanted to get, even though it's not everything. Do you want to get responses now? Do we want the Minister to put the responses in writing? Or do you want to have another session where we will be really dealing with this? Can I pose that question before, Minister, you come in, so that we can then... I'm worried because I've already taken a bit of members' lunch time now. That is Lian.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, we don't want the Minister to just rush over the questions. There could also be a possibility of some follow-ups and so on. So one would like to humbly suggest that we make arrangements for another session where he can, respond calmly. Then there is that interaction. If there are follow-ups, we do those follow-ups. I wouldn't like him to go and respond, to all the questions in writing. I think if we can have another session, it should, suffice. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Klein. What's the feeling of other members? Do you agree? And Dr. Ubabu Mabika. Are you better now?
Yes. Come in, Bob Mabika.
No, I think I go with the suggestion made by Honorable Klein.
Okay. Is that
Thank you very much, Minister. We really apologize for this. It's not out of your own making, it's our making. We will consult with your office for the follow-up meeting on that. Yes. We will nevertheless give you a minute or so to say one or two things. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Could I suggest that what we could do is, I think we due fairly shortly to do our next quarterly report. And because the quarterly reports really cover fairly similar themes, although this is a big storyline over 5 years, that we, in the presentation, I come back and I also respond to this so that it takes place quite soon. I think it may even be in the next week or two. So if the chair is comfortable and the committee is in agreement, I will incorporate the responses to certainly some of these areas in the next sitting of the portfolio committee dealing with EDD quarterly reports. Thank you.
I don't have a problem. The only snag is that, Minister, this is your midterm of review. And it would be, to me, much better if it's addressed likewise. I know that you've been giving some of these responses in your quarterly reports. We do have that. But coming in this form so that we are also able to write a report aligned to your quarterly review, even though you said it's a preliminary, we put it as such. And then so that we separate the two, and we have quarterly and we also have this, because this is quite a good document, because it's sort of giving us the overview of everything. Can we agree on that and then move on? Okay. Thanks very much, Minister. Can we then really thank the Minister for this presentation, and I think it's really opened our eyes on some of the issues. I know the issues of targets that were not really specific, but I think the report is really attempting to be much more broader than reporting to saying this, you promised 50 things and then now you have 40 things, 40 jobs created and so forth. And I think we must also look at and view it in that manner. Thank you very much for this, and we will arrange for the next meeting sooner so that you are able to conclude the report on the midterm. Members, thank you very much for your patience. The meeting stands adjourned. Did you all sign the register, ne?
Yes.